The following takes place between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m.
I'm your Huckleberry.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Alan Butler, and I would like to welcome you back to the second hour of today's show. Jason, would you please introduce Dr. Johnson to our listeners?
Thank you, Alan. We're joined on the phone now by Dr. Elena Johnson. She was actually born in communist Romania, and she survived. She was legally immigrated and became a U.S. citizen in 1978 to become a proud naturalized American citizen. Dr. Johnson earned 4 college degrees in the United States. She taught economics as a college professor for 30 years. She speaks 6 languages. She's authored the book Echoes of Communism, that's about her experience in her life in communist Romania. And she's currently writing another book, The Problem with American Education.
Now, and I discovered her. I was researching Obama's energy policy and came across an excellent article she wrote for the Canada Free Trade, Free Press?
Canada Free Press, yes.
Okay. Is one of the languages you speak Russian?
Yes, it is. We had to under communism, yes.
Я немного говорю по-русски.
Я говорю по-русски.
Немного.
Немного.
Я забыл много.
Okay. Perhaps we should revert to English.
Yes. Now, I took a lot of Latin, too, but I've forgotten most of it. Sum SS, summa est sunt. I remember that. Well, tell us about Obama's energy policy, or lack thereof.
Lack thereof is probably a better word. Well it's pretty upsetting because, according to economists, of the 6 U.S. recessions that we've experienced since 1970, all but one, which is the 2001 9/11 recession, they were all linked to energy, and that usually happened when the personal consumption expenditures of individual American citizens have exceeded 6%. And right now we are way past that. This year's food prices alone have climbed as an average 6.5% since the beginning of January. So it's not a good picture. And his lack of energy policy, as he stated, he wants to drive the coal industry out of business, and he wants our gasoline prices to necessarily skyrocket, and it seems like we're going in that direction since the prices of oil have doubled since 2008. And certainly we can't blame it entirely on him. There are other variables that cause the price of oil to increase, but the fact that he imposed a moratorium on the oil drilling in the Gulf while allowing foreign nations to drill is one of the variables. And the fact that we have so much world unrest, part of it being United States not acting or hesitating to act. Of course, OPEC has a great role in it as well, because they're a cartel that colludes periodically to either reduce production or increase prices, or a combination of both. And, of course, also the increases in the price of crude oil in the West Texas Intermediate, which is usually a key oil price in determining market prices, is also a reason. And, of course, the demand growth in China, India, and other parts of the developing world. And we have not built a refinery in 25 years, to my knowledge. We've attempted to build one in Louisiana, in Garyville, I believe, in the mid-70s. And it went to court for 9 years with environmentalists, and eventually they withdrew. Why have we not built refineries? Well, they are usually not very profitable, and, of course, the environmentalists kind of stopped them every step of the way, and then the government red tape is not easy to overcome. It takes somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 different permits to build one, and according to Investors Business Daily, the cost of building a refinery alone is anywhere from $2 to $4 billion. Plus, you have to dedicate anywhere between $20 and $25 billion over a 10-year period to reduce the sulfur content in gasoline. And also, given the accident in Japan, Americans don't want nuclear power plants anywhere in their neighborhood. And of course, Obama has been pushing this non-existent green energy, and I shouldn't say it was just him. The Department of Energy, which is a worthless creation of Jimmy Carter era, it has, to my knowledge, it has not produced a watt of energy. And they are basically pushing this green energy, which is not very affordable to anybody, one component of it being the windmills. And doing my research, I found out that in California, several towns have passed ordinances to turn them off because they're so noisy when the wind exceeds 23 miles per hour. Well, they only work very well if the wind is 30 miles per hour or higher. So they're basically turning them off, and they have wasted millions of dollars of infrastructure to build these, and they're very unsightly. People don't want them in their backyard. Plus, they're killing a lot of birds.
Well, Dr. Johnson, you point out in this article, it seems that this administration in particular has done a lot as far as the economic policies in general, but the energy policies specifically to favor foreign interest at the expense of our own national interest. Can you maybe elaborate on that?
Yes, absolutely. When the BP oil spill happened in the Gulf of Mexico, everything came to a screeching halt. Nobody drilled, and thousands of people have lost their jobs, and yet other foreign countries were still allowed to drill in the Gulf. And the president gave Petrobras of Brazil $2 billion of U.S. taxpayer dollars to drill for oil practically in our own backyard under the excuse that, well, he actually assured us that the U.S. will be their best customer, and it turns out that it was China who is their main customers.
And it should also be pointed out that the $2 billion that he lent to Petrobras was actually controlled by the largest stockholder, is George Soros,
exactly.
Who is Obama's main largest campaign contributor.
Exactly. Initially, he owned stock, and because people have caught on and were quite upset, he sold the shares, but then he has repurchased them since then.
Well, you know, the other thing I noticed about Obama, I saw an interview he did with Bob Harwell. And, you know, basically what he was saying, when he wants these high prices. Now, he's been up in front of the American people feeling our pain, to use Bill Clinton speak. But in reality, I mean, if you go back, like you pointed out, he wants to bankrupt the coal companies. I've seen him say it in his own words, out of his own mouth.
Yeah.
He basically told Bob Harwell that he didn't want to see a sudden rise in gasoline prices. He wanted to do the old frog in water. He wants it to gradually go up, and he wants us to be paying $7-$8 a gallon for gasoline. That is the world of Obama. But our media, as you point out in this well-written article, has gone mum.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, that's why I had to go to Canada Free Press to publish this article, because nobody in this country would touch such an article. So we have very few venues to express the truth. As a matter of fact, we are in a very dire situation because he's pushing this Volt car. And I don't understand if liberals understand that in order to create the electricity necessary to power this Volt and the Priuses, the green energy cars, it requires electricity, which is generated in this country mainly with coal, some nuclear, and some hydro power electricity. So where do they think it's going to come from? We do have the biofuels, but that's another disaster in the making, because out of every 10 ears of corn that we're producing, four of them are going to produce biofuel. So it is quite expensive in a way because you are causing shortages of food.
Jason?
Well, you mentioned that the policy, at least the rhetoric that's coming out of President Obama, I mean, it's blatantly contradicting itself. It's almost schizophrenic. But what are the solutions? What do we do?
Well, that's a very good question. I think if I had an actual answer to it, I would be in Washington making policy. But first of all, I think we need to cut spending, and number one. And number two, we need to release the drilling in the U.S. and also release the building of new refineries and start building some nuclear power plants. Because France, for example, I've heard a lot of liberals saying, oh, we just consume so much oil, 10 times more than France. Yeah, but France generates most of its electricity with nuclear power, which we don't. And all people also forget that we consume a lot of energy when we are all over the world fighting wars and defending our people, being generous, extremely generous with various international entities. So all this stuff costs money.
Yeah, actually, we're borrowing money from the people who we are defending in order to defend them.
Exactly. Well, the most upsetting thing happened this week when the president was posturing that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, we're not going to be able to meet the Social Security checks. And I stopped for a second. What is he trying to say? That we really don't have money for Social Security, that we have spent it all, the so-called promise lockbox is empty, and we have to borrow it from China in order to pay Social Security recipients, people who have paid into Social Security for years and years. Where is the money? But the shortfall is only about $130 billion or so, which could be easily taken care of if they would do away with Department of Energy, for example, because it's not really creating any energy. Or they could just do away with the Obamacare because it's such a disaster so far, and we wouldn't have a problem, in my opinion.
Well, Dr. Johnson, I'd love to keep talking, but we're about out of time. I hope you will agree to come on our show with any article you care to write.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Okay, thank you. This is Alan Butler, Butler on Business, and we'll be back in a couple moments with Mark Thornton.
The Linda was mine till the time that I found her, holding Jim, loving him. Then Sue came along.
Hello from Dr. Roof.
And hello from Dale Cardwell of Trustdale, working for you to cut through the hype and misinformation and lead you to the best contractors, products, and services available. Trustdale has identified Dr. Roof as your safest choice and best value in roofing, as well as all your exterior needs.
Your trust is a major accomplishment for us, Dale. 23 years ago, we adopted a simple formula. Provide people with what they want, a great job with great care and attention to detail. And here's the proof. Dr. Roof can give our customers peace of mind with a third-party independent roof inspection by GAF, who, along with Dr. Roof, stands behind a 25-year no-leak workmanship warranty and lifetime on material.
That's amazing.
Especially since there are no enforced standards or codes or licensing for roofers in Georgia.
Well, that's why I recommend you, Dr. Roof.
So for all your roofing and exterior needs, call Dr. Roof at 770-552-ROOF or on the web at drroof.com. That's drroof.com, spelled drroof.com.
What will the blonde bombshell of conservative pundit say next? Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. The latest issue of Town Hall Magazine features an exclusive interview with Ann Coulter. And check out Town Hall Magazine's investigative report into how the Obama Justice Department funneled weapons and ammunition to Mexico's drug cartels. Yep, you heard me right. It's a fresh, intelligent bit of conservative reporting that Town Hall Magazine readers come to expect. And right now, you can receive Ann Coulter's latest book as your free gift when you subscribe to Town Hall Magazine. Log on to townhallmagazine.com and check it out. Townhallmagazine.com.
Do you like to win?
You are a winner.
You have a chance to win a brand new 3D TV or a new iPad 2 with our Facebook Like to Win contest.
This might be your lucky day.
To qualify, just hit the like button on Biz1190's Facebook page. Log on to Biz1190.com and click on the Facebook link to get there. Then fill out the online entry blank.
If you're already our Facebook friend, just fill out the entry blank on our Facebook page.
Like to win.
We have a winner.
Details and contest rules at biz1190.com. Weekdays at 2, keep it locked to Biz 1190 for American Advisor. Join Scott Carter as he offers his unique insights on finance, the economy, and the precious metals market. American Advisor, only on Biz 1190, part of the Wall Street Radio Network, always right on the money.
More must be done to reduce poverty and dependency, and believe me, nothing is more important than welfare reform. It's now common knowledge that our welfare system has itself become a poverty trap, a creator and reinforcer of dependency.
Okay, welcome back to Butler on Business. Jason, would you please introduce Mark?
Alan, we're joined on the phone now by Dr. Mark Thornton. He's a senior resident fellow at the Ludwig von Mises Institute. He's the book review editor for the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics, and he's the author of several books, including The Economics of Prohibition. Dr. Thornton, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Hey, it's great to be with you.
Well, I want to get to the economic and social impacts of prohibition, but first I hear that you have some interesting thoughts about the debt ceiling debate that we'd love to hear.
Yeah, everybody's talking about the debt ceiling these days, and it's talking about raising the debt ceiling. All the parties in Washington agree that we need to raise it. It's just how we're going to get there. My suggestion is that we really need to think about lowering the debt ceiling over time so that we could actually do start cutting back government and we start turning over resources, the land, labor, and capital, to entrepreneurs. We need to cut the pay of federal workers. We need to cut their benefits. We need to reduce regulations. There's a recent study out that suggests that by cutting just one regulator out of the entire federal apparatus, GDP would go up by $6.2 million, and we would add 100 private sector worker jobs as a result. So if we cut the regulatory budget by, say, 5% or $2.8 billion, we're talking about increasing GDP by $75 billion and adding a million jobs. So the whole emphasis here needs to be on cutting debt, not increasing it. We all know that debt is the problem. The solution should be obvious, that we need to start reducing debt, and that has to start with the federal government.
Dr. Thornton, that's a great point. I think a lot of what is lost in this debate and this discussion is exactly what you highlighted, that government spending is the problem, government regulation is the problem. If we had a deficit, let's say, of $300 million when the government was spending $1 trillion, then that would actually be better than a balanced budget when they're spending $5 trillion a year. I mean, the issue is government spending.
Absolutely. It's government spending. It's the government debt that allows it to spend beyond its means, spending our means. And what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now is spinning this issue, confusing the American public, talking about these various proposals when the true emphasis should be on capping that debt ceiling or reducing it so that the federal government has to live within its means and start selling off some of its assets, and stop borrowing money. Another issue is, we all know, everybody, a PhD economist down to the taxi cab driver, knows that one of the problems with the recovery is that businesses can't get loans. Individuals can't get loans. Entrepreneurs are cut off from borrowing, and the reason is that the federal government is borrowing such a huge proportion of it. So if we capped the federal government's ability to get more debt, then more money, more capital would be available for businessmen, entrepreneurs, and individuals out there in the economy, and it just jumpstarts the economy in that fashion.
Mark, you know, one thing our listeners may not be aware of is that the Fed is actually paying the banks not to lend the money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what the Federal Reserve has been doing the last few years is just absolutely criminal. Everything is for the big banksters, and nothing is left over for the average man, woman on the street trying to make a mortgage, trying to keep a job, things of that nature. They're kowtowing to the banks, and they're certainly not helping the little banks. As you guys know, I mean, there's a lot of little banks all around the Atlanta area that have failed, and so there's no help for the little guy. It's all the big banksters.
Well, Dr. Thornton, another area where the government has its hands in activities is that of prohibiting certain substances, prohibiting certain activities. And these prohibitions really have dire consequences, both intended and unintended, Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your book, The Economics of Prohibition, and what you were hoping to accomplish with that book?
I'd absolutely love to. You know, I've been studying prohibition, alcohol prohibition of the past, drug prohibition, marijuana prohibition of the present, and other countries around the world. And what I found is that as enforcement is ratcheted up or as penalties are raised, what happens is that the entrepreneurs in the black market switch to higher potency drugs. They reduce the purity of drugs sold on the street. And all this increases the danger of using these drugs. And, of course, then they start moving from drugs from, like, marijuana and cocaine to things like crack cocaine, heroin, and crystal meth. Because of the economics of increased enforcement and increased penalties. So it's really the prohibition itself that's making these drugs so harmful and so deadly and dangerous. And now we're up to over 25,000 overdose emergency room visits for illegal and prescription drugs that are consumed for non-medical purposes. So this is a tremendous burden on our healthcare system. We've seen the crime rates, of course, high, and if we look around the world, we see that areas where prohibition is being enforced, the murder rate is just incredibly high. So we get more crime, we get more violence. The political system is corrupted, as we see in places like Mexico and Colombia, and even here in the United States, and obviously in places like Afghanistan, which is a drug-growing country. And then all the health consequences of keeping these, you know, a medical issue or a social issue, trying to solve it with the billy club and the jail, what we see is the health consequences are just staggering. As I mentioned, the overdoses are incredibly high. HIV spread through dirty needles is very high, except in places where it's not an issue, like in Switzerland. They have needle exchange programs for drug addicts, and they have almost no spread of AIDS and HIV due to dirty needles. So it's incredibly counterproductive, and that's what people don't get. They think that if you legalize, you'll just get more of the same problems. You'll just increase crime and corruption and deaths and violence. And the reality is if you legalize these things, they become normalized, and we start applying normal business practices, normal legal system practices, property rights, distinctions and so forth, so that these things become normalized and you don't generate all of these negative, ghastly social consequences.
Dr. Thornton, we had a guest on, Dan D'Amico from Loyola, who had actually pointed out that the war against drugs has become kind of an industry for law enforcement as a way of confiscating the ill-gotten gains of the trade.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our law enforcement system has grown tremendously as a result of this war on drugs, and they've taken away a lot of our constitutional rights and guarantees in the process. But look, if I'm sure Dan talked about the prison system and how vastly it's grown over time, a lot of private prisons, but you know, just prisons in general, and the vast majority of the people in prison are nonviolent drug offenders, and of course there are violent drug offenders as well in there, but the vast majority of all of our crime is directly or indirectly the result of the war on drugs. And of course, if we legalize it, you normalize it, and there's none of this prison growth and breaking up families, putting breadwinners in prison, splitting up families. And you know, the reality is that also increases the burden of social costs of the welfare system because of breaking up families. And of course, it's really ghastly in the sense that black Americans are targeted in this whole process, and as a result, make up a huge percentage of the prison population who are non-violent drug offenders, African-American men, who are simply taken out of society and punished for basically not harming anybody whatsoever. And African-Americans are vastly targeted in this whole war on drugs. It's just insane.
Dr. Thornton, in the most basic sense, drugs are, I mean, they're really a product like milk or shoes, or let me think of maybe a more dangerous one, I don't know, dynamite. How do we minimize the misuse of certain products or substances?
Well, you know, that's something we also have to look at in terms of making people responsible for their actions. And so, you have to look at the so-called social safety net and reevaluate that. The social safety net means that, you know, you get free ambulances, hospitals, emergency rooms, medicine, doctors, the whole nine yards, plus if you lose your job, you're backed up by welfare and unemployment insurance and all the rest. And those sorts of things, which we all think are, you know, fine and dandy, actually contribute greatly to irresponsible behavior. And so, you know, the marketplace punishes people for irresponsible behavior. Alcoholics and drug addicts are less likely to get jobs. They're less likely to get promoted. They're less likely to be successful entrepreneurs. And so the marketplace is the, you know, where the reality hits is one of the best teachers of responsible behavior. And you know, drugs can be consumed responsibly, but they can be consumed irresponsibly. And, you know, and government has shown a complete, absolutely inability to do anything about that. And from my view and what my book shows is that all of their efforts actually contribute to irresponsible drug use that tends to generate social consequences and burdens for the taxpayer. And so we have to do everything possible to make sure that our society is such that the support system becomes much more privately oriented and much less government oriented, so that people are evaluated on a case-by-case basis whether or not they're worth helping, and less so that these things are an absolute given right that the government demands no matter what.
Dr. Thornton, in your book, The Economics of Prohibition, the history is there. You have historical examples. The economics is there, and you also provide a general theory, a general framework in which to analyze a lot of these issues. How can our listeners best find a copy of your book?
Well, you can go to Mises.org and order a copy, but you can also go to Mises.org and in the search button put The Economics of Prohibition PDF, and you'll be sent to a link where you can get a free electronic copy of the book. And I encourage everybody to do that. And if you like it, you think it's worthwhile, buy a copy. It's real cheap.
Well, Mises.org is certainly a great resource. You guys have a ton of great free information, as well as you're alluding to, opportunities to purchase books and watch a lot of videos, and we certainly appreciate everything that you guys do down there.
Yeah, we're open 24/7, 365. Everything's for free. The books are really cheap if you want a hard copy, and there's no registration or anything, and it's the largest economic webpage in the world, one of the most trafficked webpages in the world. And I encourage everybody to go and check it out.
Well, Dr. Thornton, we're running out of time, so we're going to have to leave it right there. But we certainly appreciate your time today on the show. Again, we've been speaking with Mark Thornton. He is the author of the book, The Economics of Prohibition. And I strongly urge everybody to go to Mises.org and check it out.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is Alan Butler, Butler on Business. And we'll be back with some more Jimbo on the other side of the break.
Biz 1190. Travel and transit.
Well, we're seeing no departure delays out of Hartsfield-Jackson, but still have this 2.5-hour departure delay out of San Francisco, and now are seeing some slight delays out of Philadelphia. Parking lots at the airport are open. Security wait times at the main checkpoint as well as the south terminal checkpoint is running you less than a 10-minute wait. However, at the north terminal checkpoint, we're seeing a 10 to 20-minute wait. And looking at MARTA, all buses and trains are on time. I'm Joy Presley with your Travel and Transit Report on Biz 1190.
Hi, this is Dr. David Dillard. Do you have chronic sinus issues? Now there's a new proven option for sinus surgery. It's called balloon sinuplasty.
If you've been diagnosed with chronic sinusitis, you may be a candidate for balloon sinuplasty. Dr. David Dillard is certified in sinuplasty, and he is the first Acclarent certified surgeon in Georgia to perform this breakthrough office procedure.
This procedure, balloon sinuplasty, is performed in-house, so there's no visit to the hospital, and the recovery time is very minimal. Many people go back to work the very same day.
If you're suffering from facial pain, pressure, congestion, or maybe having difficulty breathing through the nose, teeth pain, or a loss of smell or taste, there's a good chance you have sinusitis. There's one office here in Georgia that now has this less invasive option that is clinically proven to be safe, effective, and will improve the quality of your life. Suffer no more. Call Dr. David Dillard for an appointment. 678-689-1100. That's 678-689-1100. 678-689-1100.
Breathe better and you'll feel better.
The days are getting longer, warmer. Soon you'll be firing up the grill out on the deck. If you have a deck, that is. And if you don't, well, you could always build it yourself. Or even better, have a friend build it for you. A trusted friend like NextGen Contractors. Michelle Bishop and NextGen Contractors have been making friends with their clients since 1985. And with springtime right on top of us, NextGen is your perfect choice to build that new deck you've always dreamed of having. NextGen will work with you to help create exactly the deck you want, whether it includes a hot tub, planters, bench seats, awnings, you name it. The work will be done professionally, on time, and affordably. And if you already have a deck, but maybe it needs a bit of sprucing up, well, you know who to call. Check out our work online at nextgencontractors.com and then give us a call. We'll be happy to chat all about it with you and answer any questions you have. The consultation is free and there's no obligation. NextGen Contractors, your new best friend for your next big project. NextGenContractors.com.
Biz 1190, traffic and weather.
Getting word of a gas main break in Smyrna that has shut down a portion of Windy Hill between Atlanta Road and Reed Street there around the old Belmont Hill site. On that stretch near the railroad tracks in Atlanta Road, expect to be detoured and delayed around that for sure. Local expressways are okay, though, between heart of downtown and the suburbs, inbound or outbound. 285 around the perimeter looking good. Downtown connector is okay for the moment. And that is the latest from the Biz 1190 Traffic Command Center. I'm Chris Monroe. It's sunny but hazy and hot and humid, 86 degrees. Eric Wilhelm's at the 24-hour Weather Center with the AccuWeather forecast.
We have some relief from the heat coming for tomorrow and the weekend, but today we're up to 93. There'll be a thunderstorm or two this afternoon into tonight. Tonight's low 74. Tomorrow and Saturday, the high 85 degrees. Chance for a thunderstorm each day. Sunday, maybe a thunderstorm, high 88. I'm AccuWeather's Eric Wilhelm for Biz 1190.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
Okay, welcome back for the encore of Jim Zotterer today. Jimbo.
The encore.
Yeah, well, we got you two different segments today, primarily because this is our monthly Getting Involved segment, and you're definitely involved. So people are sitting at home. They're all upset about the political process. But as you point out, that you know, if they're not engaged, it's their fault. So how do they get involved right now? Let's say they're just totally fed up.
All right, I'm going to give you a lot of ideas right here. So people that are out there listening, you may want to grab a pencil and make some notes. But number one, I'd say if you don't vote, you don't count. A lot of people that complain out there, it's amazing to me how many people I've run into that complain, and they don't vote. So as far as I'm concerned, and as far as the politicians are concerned, if you don't vote, you don't count. So number one, register to vote. Don't put it off anymore. Do it today. Do it next week, but get it done so that at least you've got that part taken care of.
Jim, real quick question, because I get this a lot. What if you're coming across a scenario as a voter and you have two candidates that you really don't like either one of them? Do you vote for a third party? Do you vote for the lesser of two evils? Do you just write your name in the ballot? What do you do then?
Well, I think you'd have to be more specific. Can you give me a specific situation?
Sure, let's say
Obama and McCain.
No, Obama, McCain, Obama, Mitch Romney. What do you do then?
Well, I've done all of the above. I mean, you know, I've voted, believe it or not, I voted for some Democrats in my time. There was a congressman here in Georgia by the name of Larry McDonald that I voted for every time, and I was active in the Republican Party. But Larry was the most conservative, fiscal conservative in the U.S. Congress, and as far as I was concerned, he was the best choice. I don't care what the label was on him. But as far as McCain last time and Obama, then, you know, McCain wasn't my first choice, but he was a whole lot better than Obama as far as I was concerned. So, yeah, that was the lesser of two evils. And really and truly, we may get stuck with that again when you've got a Romney running and he's more of a moderate. And then you've got a bunch of conservatives splitting up the conservative vote, and they all get 5%, 6%, 8%. But you add it all up, and Romney winds up with 35%, and he winds up winning the election. So, yeah, I think you just have to weigh it out, and you have to decide, you know, if an independent doesn't have a shot at winning, then that independent may wind up hurting a candidate that's better than, you know, that's the lesser of two evils. So, anyway, but, number one, I'd say make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure everyone in your family that's 18 years or older is registered to vote. Make sure your friends and your work associates are registered to vote. Talk it up. Hopefully they're all fiscal conservatives. If they're not, then maybe you don't want to push them getting registered to vote. But
hey, Jimbo, like Nick here, Nick the intern, college boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're worried about college boy things. And yet our politicians are up there with this debate. I mean, what they're debating, raising the debt ceiling and all, is a future tax increase on Nick and his generation. Isaac, same thing goes for you.
Exactly.
I mean, y'all have to be engaged. Now, Jason was telling me about 3 or 4 weeks ago how my generation blew it, and I kind of bowed up my generation. But it was our generation, ours and the one that preceded it.
Yeah, it was basically after Reagan. Things were going so well. The economy was just roaring. Jobs had been, you know, 24, 25 million new jobs during the Reagan years.
Yeah, real jobs, not jobs,
real jobs
saved or created.
Yeah, and everybody was making money hand over fist, and basically they ignored their civic responsibility. But I'll get into that a little bit later. You know, the number two thing, which is what you're alluding to right now, is you've got to educate yourself. So I'd say continue listening to Butler on Business, where Alan and Jason bring, you know, relevant, entertaining, and groundbreaking information to you every day. There's two excellent sources for conservatives to go to. You can go online to Human Events, or you can go online to National Review, and there's more information there than you'll have time to read, but it is excellent. I've been reading both of those periodicals and now online for over 40 years, and that's a great start for anybody that wants to educate themselves about the issues.
Jim, if our listeners go to butleronbusiness.com as well, we have a tab for essential resources, which also have a lot of great links that you can go on, and listeners can find a whole wealth of information about various issues.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Butler on Business is a great, great resource for anybody, and I'd talk to your friends and get them to start listening to Butler on Business. Get as many people involved as you can. Make it a point to inform yourself on international, national, state, and local news. Don't put your head in the sand. What happens in the Middle East and in Washington has a direct impact on your life and your family's lives. I've said on this program many times that if you want somebody to blame for the mess we're in, just look in the mirror. We're all guilty of neglect when it comes to our civic responsibilities. So now, having said all that, what are some ways that we can all get involved to make this a better country, a better community? First of all, you need to find out, you know, who is your state rep? Who's your state senator? Who's your congressman or congresswoman? Who are your United States senators? Who is on your local school board? These are all important for you to know who these people are for you and your individual areas. Then go online or send them an email or call their offices to discuss issues that are important to you and your opinion on upcoming votes. Believe me, they all register these calls down. They all register these emails. And at the end of a week or at the end of the month, they bring this information to that elected official, and they say, okay, you know, we've received 1,000 phone calls on not going along with, raising this debt limit. And what they do in Washington is they say for every 1,000 people that contact them, there's another 20,000 people out there that feel the same way. So it is important. A lot of people don't feel it's important to call your congressman or call your senator. But believe me, it is important. They have people up there that log this information and do present it to the elected officials. If you're interested in party politics, contact the Republican or Democrat Party and get on their mailing list and email blast for upcoming meetings and events you can attend and participate in. If you're an independent, join the local chapter of the Tea Party or the Libertarian Party or the Conservative Party or the Constitution Party. Of course, my hope is that all of those groups that I just listed will all join forces with the Republican Party and change the Republican Party back to the party of Reagan again. You can get involved in a presidential campaign. for a candidate of your choice. Now, you've got a lot of candidates running on the Republican side, and that's how I got involved originally. In 1975, when I was still in college at Georgia Tech, I went down with my wife to the Reagan for President campaign headquarters in Buckhead and volunteered to do whatever they needed. Karen and I met a lot of great people, also some very seasoned veterans that were in the party. They went all the way back to Barry Goldwater. And although Reagan did not win against Ford in 1976, we learned the process for becoming a delegate to the precinct, county, district, state, and national conventions. And we attended the Republican National Convention in 1976 in Kansas City as assistants to the Reagan delegates, and then repeated the process in 1980, and I became a delegate for Reagan and was able to actually cast my vote for him for president. And then during that time, I also served as Reagan's treasurer here in Georgia, headed up his speaker's bureau, formed Pro Athletes for Reagan, organized Blacks for Reagan, and worked with religious roundtable groups motivating church people around the country to get out of the pews and get into the political process. And all of that happened in my life because I went down and I volunteered to help Ronald Reagan for president. Get involved by supporting local candidates with your time and money. Find new candidates, encourage them to run for office. Become a candidate yourself. If you have kids in high school, encourage them to get involved with an organization called Teen Pact. That's TEENPACT, Leadership Schools. You can just go online and you can find them. They're in almost all 50 states, but this is a great way to teach your kids how to get involved, how to lobby their elected officials at the state capitol in a professional and respectful way. If you have kids in college, go online to your U.S. senator or to your congressman and congresswoman's office and look into internships. My kids participated in internships in Washington, D.C. during their summers, and it was a great experience for them. They served under Senator Jeff Sessions and Senator Jim DeMint at the Senate Steering Committee. So these are some ideas that I'm throwing out that if you want to get involved, there's lots of ways for you to get involved. And I would encourage everybody, you know, to do something. But start off by registering to vote so that you can participate in the voting process. Believe it or not, there's only about 30%, 30 to 40% of the people in the United States that actually elect the president of the United States. Everybody else just sits home and complains. So anyway, those are some areas that I just wanted to go over, Alan and Jason. If you have any questions, you know, just throw them on out to me here.
Jim, I think that everything you said was great. I especially like point number two, that it's your civic duty to educate yourself. You have to be aware of what's going on. It doesn't do any good to vote if you have no idea what's going on. You have to be informed of the issues.
Well, you know, and there's a lot of people, too, that sat back and complained about what was going on, and eventually they just said, you know, every single person I seem to support winds up doing the same thing. They become like everybody else in Washington, D.C. And eventually some of those people decided to just run for office themselves. So, because if they can't depend on these people to stick to their word and do what they say they're going to do, well, at least they can control their own lives, and so a lot of those people have gotten involved. But, you know, it's really important for all of us, number one, to get educated. And that's something that is very difficult to do in some cases and all. It's easy with some of the easy issues and all, but we talk about the Federal Reserve on this program a lot. And, you know, that's a very complicated issue. There's a lot of economists in the United States that cannot tell you how the Federal Reserve actually operates. And Alan and Jason have taken a lot of time to dig in and to try to peel back the layers that are over the Federal Reserve and our banking system and try to bring that information to our listeners so that they can understand. We've had guests come on the program that have talked about the banking system and how it interacts with our government. So it's just very important for everybody to get their heads out of the sand, get involved, get educated, and become part of the solution instead of being part of the problem.
Yeah, and if any of our listeners have ideas about ways to become involved or really unique opportunities, send them our way. Send them to info@butleronbusiness.com by email or shoot them over to us using our Twitter or Facebook accounts, and we'd love to share those with the rest of the audience.
I don't know how much time we have left on this segment or if there's any other questions.
Go ahead. This is floating.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I wanted to talk about on my first segment yesterday that I thought was pretty interesting, we were talking about China and the space program, And, you know, in addition to China launching its first ever aircraft carrier, and I said yesterday that's a move seen by a lot of military experts as a major step towards projecting their power to other parts of the world. When you have aircraft carriers, you really can project your power. Look what we do. When we send the fleet over to the Middle East or whatever, I mean, we have as much firepower on one of those aircraft carriers as we had in our entire Air Force in World War II. So when you start putting these aircraft carriers around the world, China is starting to project their power, and they're also projecting, they're also protecting their supply lines, whether strategic minerals, rare earth minerals, food, oil, natural gas, whatever it may be. But what I wanted to say, too, is that China had also announced plans to build their own space station and have men on the moon by 2020. And I started to talk about this letter that I received from a guy who's been working at NASA for 30 years. And I was saying that it is instructive to kind of to see how what's going on and how these people feel. He says, well, it's been a long time coming, but we finally reached the end of the space shuttle program, first flown in 1981. The 30 years of history has reached its last flight. The orbiter Atlantis took to the skies with a final payload of supplies for the International Space Station this past Friday. Close to a million people were on hand in Florida to watch the final launch. The future for NASA and the post-shuttle world is far from certain. However, the International Space Station will be in orbit for the rest of the decade. With assembly complete, it is now time for the orbiting laboratory to live up to its promise and serve as a singular science home in a unique environment. This is what gets interesting here. To sum it all up, NASA is stuck with a president for whom space is not a priority. The president's chief science advisor is a climate change scientist who just seems to care about satellites, an incompetent administrator who got the job because he's an ex-astronaut and friends with a senator, and a bunch of congressmen who only care about NASA as it relates to jobs in their districts. Then he goes on to say, now that I've told you all the bad news, here's the upside. Real progress in space these days is being made in the private sector, something we talk about on the show all the time. Companies like SpaceX and Orbital Sciences are designing and test flying their own rockets, and once successful, will be paid by NASA to deliver supplies to the International Space Station. They're also developing their own capsules with the intent of launching humans into space in the coming years. If we're ever going to set up an outpost on the moon or travel to Mars or another planet, many of the technologies that we need are being tested on the International Space Station. Thanks to the foresight and vision of prior presidents, congressional leaders with vision, and a country that produced men and women with the training and courage to reach new heights for the United States and for mankind. So, you know, with that being said, I just think it's, again, instructive that former presidents like Kennedy that showed leadership, Reagan that showed leadership, you know, we now have a president who's shrinking back and basically cutting in areas that basically help the United States lead in the field of technology, manufacturing, and we don't have that anymore. But it looks like the private sector is going to be picking up the slack.
Jimbo, thank you very much. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right.
This is Jason Riddle on behalf of Alan Butler. We're going to hop out and pay some bills, but we'll be back in a few minutes to wrap up today's show.
Hello, I'm Bill Tatro, author, money manager, economist. No amount of wishful thinking is going to help you navigate these difficult times. Each weekday at 5, I make sense of the world, what it means to you, and what it means for your money. Tune in to It's All About Money. You'll be entertained, informed, and each day you'll leave with information that will make you a better investor and a more informed citizen. If you want to make money, tune in. It's All About Money with me, Bill Tatro, weekdays at 5, right here on Biz 1190. Always right on the money.
What will the blonde bombshell of conservative pundits say next? Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. The latest issue of Town Hall Magazine features an exclusive interview with Ann Coulter. And check out Town Hall Magazine's investigative report into how the Obama Justice Department funneled weapons and ammunition to Mexico's drug cartels. Yep, you heard me right. It's a fresh, intelligent bit of conservative reporting that Town Hall Magazine readers come to expect. And right now, you can receive Ann Coulter's latest book as your free gift when you subscribe to Town Hall Magazine. Log on to townhallmagazine.com and check it out. Townhallmagazine.com.
Join Ken Pruitt and Tom Keen weekday mornings at 9 for Surveillance, Monday through Friday mornings here on Biz 1190, as we help you keep an eye on markets around the world. Surveillance, weekday mornings at 9 on your Wall Street Business Network, Biz 1190.
My girls, they didn't care for the Overlook at first. One of them actually stole a pack of matches and tried to burn it down. But I corrected them, sir.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of today's edition of Butler on Business.
Alan, I don't know about you, but I have really enjoyed today's show. We've had some great guests on today.
Yeah, we got to fly through this last segment here. Our bad president of the month is Woodrow Wilson. Now, we touched briefly on him at the beginning of the month. We thought we'd hammer away on him a little bit more. Now, Thomas Woodrow Wilson, you'll see his picture in elementary schools. He frequently ranks in the top 10. But I hope by the time we're done telling you all about Woodrow Wilson, you will agree he was one of the worst, if not the worst, presidents in U.S. history. First of all, he was born to slaveholding parents. He was an attorney here in Atlanta. He became president of Princeton and immediately introduced segregation. No person of color attended that New Jersey institution until 1940. Solely because of the practices implemented by Woodrow Wilson. He was not the first choice for the Democrats when he ran for president. He won on the 46th ballot. He did not win a plurality, or he did not win a majority of the votes because the Republicans had split between Taft and Teddy Roosevelt. Now, as soon as he came into office, Jason, what did he do?
Well, he did a lot of negative things, but besides the segregation, he was one of the first presidents to openly, or I guess he was the first president to openly criticize the Constitution and Declaration of Independence as really being documents that constricted the progressive agenda. They were more impediments to him than they were any type of document holding our individual human rights as some type of principled ideal. He rejected the principles of separation of powers, of checks and balances, that were really foundational to the American government at the time.
And under Wilson, segregation inside the federal government became official policy. Now, in addition to that, Wilson sought war with Germany and purposely drew us in to World War I to help his banker buddies.
Well, he looked at men as the masses of people as tools. He actually wrote that a competent leader of men cares little for the internal niceties of other people's characters. He cares much, or if not that, everything for the external uses to which men may be put.
Now, as we had given you a little history on the sinking of the Lusitania, as you will recall, the German government actually tried to publish warnings here in the U.S. because the Lusitania was loaded up with armaments and sailed under the guise of being a passenger vehicle. But the Germans actually intended to sink her, so they issued ads that they ran in U.S. newspapers, and the Wilson administration who came in and stopped those ads from running in 48 of the 50 papers because he wanted the Lusitania to sink because he knew it would outrage the American people.
Well, President Wilson certainly did a lot of irresponsible things that actually brought us into the war. He ordered that merchant ships be armed with U.S. Navy guns and staffed with Navy crews, and that they fire on any surface submarines.
Well, it was only after the World War I that Congress began to realize that Wilson was, in fact, a dangerous fanatic, and they stood up to him when he was trying to peddle that League of Nations. Now, no American interest was at stake in World War I, and yet a total of 116,516 men died and 204,000 were wounded. And Wilson actually bragged about fighting a war with no national interest at stake.
Well, he was the first one, Alan, that created a propaganda department in the United States. He created the government's apparatus whose sole function and purpose was to lie to the American people, to mislead the American people. And he was the first one really to do this through the modern means of propaganda in the West.
Well, and it should be pointed out that the Nazis actually looked to Wilson's propaganda arm when they came up with the Goebbels outfit. But a trained group of nearly 100,000 men would go out and give four-minute speeches to any audience that would listen. They portrayed Wilson as this larger-than-life leader, and the Germans you know, when they were trying to get us into the wars as being a bunch of duds. But anyway, Wilson harshly suppressed dissent and resistance among citizens and the press. Tell them about Wilson's Sedition Act.
Yeah, just like the Sedition Acts of 1798, he was trying to really prohibit Americans from criticizing their own government during the time of war. Citizens could not speak, print, or write or publish any disloyal, profane, what he would call abusive language about the government or the military. And he actually gave the Postmaster General the authority to revoke the mailing privileges of anybody who disobeyed this. So he was really, I mean, this was a big instance of censorship.
Yeah, about 75 newspapers were shut down by the government in this way, and many others were given warnings. In the fashion of a police state, the Department of Justice arrested tens of thousands of individuals without just cause. One person here in the United States, not one, but all of us, they were not safe even within their own walls if they criticized the Wilson administration. A letter to federal attorneys and marshals said that citizens had nothing to fear as long as they, quote, obey the law and keep their mouth shut. And, in fact, the department created the precursor, as I mentioned just a minute ago, to the Gestapo, called the American Protective League. Now, its job was to spy on fellow citizens and turn seditious persons or draft dodgers into the U.S. government.
Well, Alan, all in all, it's estimated that about 175,000 Americans were arrested for failing to demonstrate, quote-unquote, their patriotism in one way or another. The list of things that could go on and on about Woodrow Wilson were just about out of time, and we haven't even begun to touch on things like the League of Nations, the income tax, the Federal Reserve, and other ways that he really sowed the seeds to doing some very destructive economic things here at home.
Under Woodrow Wilson, it was, in fact, a industrial dictatorship without parallel. And we'll get into more of Wilson before the month is over, but when you see his picture hanging in the schools, that should tell you a little bit about that school you are in. This is Alan Butler, Butler on Business. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 10 a.m.
Clinton time! Clinton time!
That's all, folks.